This is Paul McCartney from 1992. Hope of Deliverance is the name of the song from the album Off the Ground, which I thought was pretty good stuff. We're talking with Paul Dean, Australian UFO researcher, and I realize this we're pretty deep into the weeds here. This is sort of like grad school level ufology. It's not funny lights in the sky. It's tracing the paper trail, and it gets kind of complicated. How this works, where all this information flows, but it's important to understand the ultimate puzzle of how our government, how our military responds to UFO incidents, especially the serious ones, the kind that we're talking about tonight. For example, if a UFO were to intrude over nuclear weapons storage at, say, Nellis Air Force Base here in Nevada, or over Area 52, Tonopah, or some other sensitive installation, how would that incident be handled today? Where would the reports go? Who would read it? Who would respond to it? That's sort of where we're leading with the information that Paul has dug up. In a moment, I'll ask him about NORAD, which seems to be sort of at the top of the food chain in this process these days, and then we'll open up the phones with some calls and questions and comments from our listeners. Stick around. Our final hour of Coast to Coast is coming up. So, Paul, we've been covering sort of your contribution to UFO research, how you were able to narrow down this gigantic pile of documents and pick out some pretty key phrases that allows you to understand sort of the structure of what some would call a cover-up. If a UFO incident were to happen today over the nuclear weapons storage facility, say, at Nellis Air Force Base, where would it go? What does OpRep 3 tell us about where it would go and who would look at it?
Well, an OpRep 3 report, serious incident, serious event, definitely goes to, from whoever sends it, it could be a command post or a squadron communications center or the operations center at an Air Force base or whatever, or a ship like a task force, like a battleship. And now the OpRep 3 reports that, you know, could and have done in the past contain immediate and urgent UFO activity narratives are sent to the National Military Command Center in Washington, D.C., the Joint Chiefs of Staff, also the North American Aerospace Defense Command headquarters at Peterson Air Force Base in Colorado, and any if it's sent from an Army installation, it goes to headquarters Army, headquarters Material Army, headquarters Intelligence Army, Security Command and Intelligence, and so on. So right now, if a UFO was hovering over, say, I don't know, Edwards Air Force Base, California, I mean, providing they're still using the OpRep 3 system right now for UFOs, I mean, the last time OpRep 3 instructions were published was as late as 2014. So, you know, so there are a chain of asymmetrical and higher commands where serious UFO reports do go, and OpRep 3 reports are serious enough, and any investigation or follow up that is done of them, the actual records digitally or printouts would be kept for at least 5 years and probably more like 25 years. Now, I've seen OpRep 3's actual OpRep 3 messages involving all sorts of stuff, you know, broken limbs and crashed helicopters from, say, Vietnam War, and they're actually still available. They're still being kept in hard copy or microfilm at the Air Force Historical Research Agency at Maxwell Air Force Base, Alabama. So OpRep 3s are quite suitable for being kept. They're not such low-level stuff that they'd be shredded after 5 or 10 years. So there is definitely a paper trail here to follow up. Now, I'll give you another example of where I saw the word OpRep 3 and UFOs together, which really interested me. There is Robert Todd got hold of a NORAD, and the NORAD, well, it's a manual, so it's a military manual, and it's actually a joint manual between North American Aerospace Defense Command and the old Aerospace Defense Command, both located at Ent Air Force Base and Peterson Air Force Base in Colorado. It's actually called NORAD ADCOM Manual 55-19, Volume 7. And the title is Aerospace Reporting System. Now, what's interesting is quite seriously, this is what it says. Section 15 lays out instructions for something called identification of air traffic. And there's a special subsection. It's more like a figure, like a template. And above it, because NORAD and ADCOM pick up things on radar all the time. They're called unknown tracks. They're just planes and maybe UFOs and whatever. And it says figure 15-4. And it says this, figure 15-4, OPREP 3 unknown track report. And on point one, it says subject and purpose. This report form gives the NORAD Command and Operations Center additional data concerning each track classified as unknown to include unidentified flying objects dash UFOs. So here we have in writing in 1978 now an actual joint North American Aerospace Defense Command and Aerospace Defense Command, two huge organizations, both that had 25,000 people working for them back then. This is saying that any time a NORAD or an ADCOM regional radar center picks
up Hello?
An unknown track. Hello?
Yes, we got you.
Hello?
Yes, we can hear you. Can you hear? Yes, we can hear you, Paul.
Yeah, so this is saying, again in 1978, this is saying that any unknown track, like just, you know, anything on radar picked up that's a bit odd by NORAD or ADCOM in, you know, the regional operations centers or the sector, you know, where the radar sites are all over, you know, the States and Canada. This is saying these data on the unknown, you know, radar track via an OPREP 3 message, and that and an unknown radar track includes, it actually says, include unidentified flying objects dash UFOs. Now, this is extraordinary to see in a joint ADCOM and NORAD manual. These are two of the highest air defense and air sovereignty organizations the world has ever known. And remember, UFOs apparently don't affect national security. So to actually write the words, now, you know, they're not even supposed to, after 1969 with the closure of Project Blue Book, they're not even supposed to be using the word UFO. Okay, you know, fair enough, study, you know, watch unknown tracks because they could be hostile aircraft or aircraft in distress or hijacked planes or whatever. But to actually write here that, you know, this report former provides the NORAD Combat Operations Center with data concerning tracks classified as unknown, bracket, to include unidentified flying objects, UFOs, close bracket, is rather extraordinary. So it became pretty evident, it has always been evident to me, that if anyone knows more than anyone else on the UFO matter from a detection and reporting point of view, that we can get in documentation, that we actually can hold in our hand, I've always felt for years it is NORAD. Now, NORAD, for those who don't know, NORAD I'll give you an example. NORAD is a huge organization that's made up of elements of the United States Air Force, the Army, the Navy, the Marine Corps, and their job is to both look at what's going on in space, with the help of the Strategic Command based at Offutt Air Force Base, Nebraska. And anyway, NORAD is based at Peterson Air Force Base, Colorado. And as far as what goes on in the air above North America, their fact sheet from 2008, for example, says that NORAD is charged with the missions of aerospace warning and aerospace control for North America. Aerospace warning includes detection, validation, and warning of attack against North America, whether by aircraft, missiles, or space vehicles. And aerospace control includes ensuring air sovereignty and air defense of the airspace in Canada of the United States. So put simply, NORAD uses primary radar systems to build up like an integrated or recognized air picture of what's going on above North America. So I've always felt that if anyone is in control of the UFO matter, if weird things are flying around that aren't planes and missiles and balloons, then NORAD must know what's going on. And what's interesting is this. If you read the deep documentation that is available from the Defense Technical Information Center and so on, we find that when a NORAD regional operation or sector operations center picks up something in North America's airspace, like in the air, when they pick up something that is not transponding on radio, that's not communicating, that is behaving maybe oddly, that's not on a known flight plan, what happens first is the battle space controller or the air traffic controller that's watching this on the screen, first what he does, he declares it an unknown. It's literally called an unknown track, right? Now, If it is coming from, say, Cuba or Russia very fast, it's called a hostile track. If it is, if it's going away from the United States or Canada and it appears to be behaving reasonably normally, but it's just not, you know, identifiable, it's called a pending track. But the one, of course, that we're interested in is unknown track. And what happens is the NORAD Regional Operations Center has 5 minutes, exactly 5 minutes, to identify what the object is. So it's, let's say it's moving across Kansas very quickly at 32,000 feet. There's no flight. The FAA doesn't have a foggiest idea what's going on, like Federal Aviation Administration. The airports don't know what's going on. So NORAD think, okay, now we're getting worried, right? So NORAD, they have exactly what to communicate with this thing that's in the sky they're watching. They actually declare it something called an NRU, which is NORAD Remaining Unknown. And that is where you should find UFOs. I mean, if UFOs are still hovering, you know, carrying on above Canada and America, as has always been reported, NORAD are calling them NRUs, NORAD Remaining Unknowns. And what's interesting is there is a database of them with heaps of information about them, and I've found out where that database is.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what, we will come back to that, but I promised I wanted to get to a couple of calls in this half hour. So let's take one from our first-time caller line, Nick in Prescott, Arizona. Hi, Nick. You're on with Paul Dean.
Yeah, hi. I was calling to actually ask the guest if he knew anything about the big data dump that apparently just happened a couple of months ago regarding UFOs. I don't know much about it, but I remember seeing something, you know, on the internet a few months ago about a bunch of information about UFOs.
So yeah, the CIA made a bunch of files available. I think much of that, especially the UFO stuff, had already been made public, but they made sort of a PR example out of it and made it seem as if it was really some big revelation. Paul, are you following that?
What actually happened was, it's really odd, but the CIA, what documents, so the CIA have been going forever, and any documents that they've got that they have released to the public or Congress under the FOI Act or the Mandatory Declassification Review Act and so on, any documents they've got, they have had a percentage of them online, like literally on the internet at cia.gov/FOI. But what's weird is that the majority of their released documents, I'm not talking about classified stuff, I'm talking about the majority of their released documents were actually not online. So it's really weird. So 8 million, they had something like 8 million of their released records, 8 million pages of their released records on the internet, but they had a further, you know, like 100 million pages or whatever that were technically available, but they just weren't available unless you actually went to the CIA in Virginia, in Langley or wherever it is. So what happened was, the CIA, it's taken them 10 years to get off their bums, but they have finally put all their records that they've ever released, legally released, they've put them finally online. And now, most of the UFO stuff, there has been a massive dump of information. There are some UFO files that I've already found that have never been seen before. They're not particularly explosive. They're often duplicates in different forms, or, you know, a lot of it's about people, like about UFO researchers trying to sue the government and so on, and newspaper articles they've collected. But to answer your question, yeah, the CIA have suddenly put on a massive, massive, massive amount of released documents onto the internet finally, and a lot of it contains stuff about UFOs. Some of it's been seen before by us, some of it has never have, about unidentified aircraft, you know, weather phenomenon, meteorites, you know, like UFO groups. Often a lot of it's duplicate material in different forms, like draft letters instead of the real letters and stuff like that. But it's really, really interesting. It's a heck of a lot to go through, though. Yeah.
Sure. Thanks for the call, Nick. Is there any kind of effort, Paul, in Australia to put all the stuff that you and others have accumulated online so that the public can access it?
Yeah, there is. So our national, so any government agency in Australia that has produced files of any sort, a lot of mid and high level stuff, like we're not talking about canteen menus at schools.
Right.
like that somewhere called the National Archives of Australia, and then it, and some of it goes to the War Memorial of Australia or the State Library. Myself and a researcher, an Australian researcher called Keith Basterfield, have been instrumental in getting all the released UFO files that we've known about for years, you know, Air Ministry files and Navy files and Air Force files. We've tried to put them all in one space, and we've been successful in doing that. Everything is everything that's at least been released to me and Keith and to the general public.
Okay, we're having some problems hearing you, Paul. I hope you're still with us. Are you still there?
Hello?
Yes, we can hear you now.
Hello?
Yes,
yeah.
Hello, so, we can hear you.
Yeah, there's an Englishman called Isaac Coy who has been really, really helpful. He's been instrumental, very, very fast with digital work. Who has, him, Keith Basterfield, and myself, and a couple of others have managed to put all of the released Australian files in one spot. And, you know, I can send anyone links to that one spot. You know, there's about 150 PDFs of Australian government UFO files available, yeah.
Okay, we're having some difficulties with the line, but I think we're gonna our crew is working on fixing this problem. I'll try to take one more call before we go to the break. On the wild card line, Jeff in Culver City. Good morning, Jeff. How you doing?
What? How you doing, George and Mr. Paul Dean? Yes, these UFOs have been hovering around Earth for apparently thousands, if not hundreds of years. But given our modern technological techniques to identify these hovering crafts, which managed to, you know, enter our atmosphere, you know, and be seen only by a few people, then disappear either at ultra-high speeds in the skies or just plainly vanishing seconds before one's eyes. This is truly astonishing. But my question is this, Mr. Paul Dean. I'd just like to ask, during all of your extensive and exhaustive research throughout the years on this particular and peculiar subject, have you ever come across any verifiable documentation on the various designs of these UFO crafts? You know, many are said to be like flying saucers. Some are like gigantic tops with small bottom entrances. Some are like elongated pieces of metal stretching for miles. Some are like gigantic satellites, which resemble the letter H with a big circle in the middle. And then some are resembled like a gigantic centipede, you know, with huge suction cups underneath, you know, to elevate people up inside of them. Have you ever heard of any of these descriptions, you know, while you were doing your research in Australia? I'll take your answer up there.
Thanks, Jeff.
In Australia, can you hear me okay now?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, yes.
So in Australian...
Okay, we're having some problems here. Paul, are you there? All right, we're having some problems with our connection. We're going to try to reestablish that on it using a different line, and we're going to be going to a break here in about 30 seconds. In essence, what we've been hearing from Paul is that he's sort of been able to track where these UFO documents flow using this special terminology, and it seems to be tracking to NORAD. If there is such a thing as a central repository for UFO documents from the U.S. government, NORAD seems to be at the top of the heap. You know, we've had a lot of guests on here speculate where these reports ultimately go, especially the ones involving national security cases, intrusions over U.S. military bases. And if there is one thing that we could summarize as saying that Paul Dean's contribution has been sort of drawing a line toward NORAD as the source of that kind of information. Now, whether we can access that, that's another matter. The ultimate larger questions about who these UFO knots are or where they're from, I'm not sure that any documents can answer that. Matchbox 20 takes us into the break. We'll be right back and see if we can get a better connection for Paul Dean. There you go, parrot heads. That's Jimmy Buffett, Boat Drinks. And I play this song each year as my sort of personal declaration that winter is over. No matter what the calendar says, enough snow, wind, ice, rain, floods, enough. Let there be sunshine. And Buffett is sort of hopefully ushering in spring and then summer. We're talking with Paul Dean, UFO document researcher and expert, about his research. A lot of it is very academic, but pretty important stuff. And we'll get back to the phones in our final segment coming up in just a moment. I think we've worked out our technical problems. Paul, before we go back to the phones, a question about your big picture theory. Do you have one? Do you look at these documents and say, gosh, this sounds like ETs to me. It sounds like interdimensionals. It sounds like swamp gas. Or do you not allow yourself to go there?
I never get the time. I honestly do not know. What I know is, what I can say factually is that major commands and agencies, certainly your government and quite a few others, have definitely been confused and shown high-level concern and definitely stored information long-term, taken it really seriously. No more sniggering, no more laughing, no more outrageous hoaxes, just pure instrumented data through radar systems, through you know, pilots signing affidavits, through NORAD pro formas like the Form 61, which I might talk about in a minute, and so on. Like, there is, as far as what's actually behind it, I just do not know. Like, I've heard every theory in the book. I don't even read it anymore because...
Do you think they know?
No, personally, I don't think they know. Personally, I see so much confusion. Certainly, at most levels of the military, I see confusion or shoulder shrugging or deep level concern or whatever. I honestly do not see. I've certainly never seen a single document that honestly tells me, like, that even points in a formidable direction. I mean, it is just so weird. Like, the whole, what I do know is, I actually asked one of the best researchers in the world. He always wants to remain anonymous. You wouldn't know him. He does a lot more than me 24 hours a day. And I said to him, what do you honestly think is going on? And he said to me, I don't know, but it's really weird. That's what he said.
Okay. Well, we can all agree on that.
Yeah. And I trust this guy more than I trust myself by a long shot.
Amazing. What are you going to do with all the information? I should mention that UFOs documenting the evidence, these papers that you write, are available online. We've put the link on Coast to Coast AM. What do you want to do with it? Do you want to write a book?
I've got a blog, UFOs Documenting the Evidence, which has got 3 years' worth of blog posts, and some of them are very long. You know, some of them are 7,000 words long, and I just plan on keeping blogging all the time. Like, I'll try and do one blog every couple of weeks forever. But what ultimately I want to do is, I don't see there's any reason I can't write a book. Now, I know that print media is difficult now, and I know that, you know, like, Kindle readers and all this sort of stuff are all rage. But either way, I do have to put it in one spot. I mean, I would like to write a book on the U.S. military's appraisal of the UFO situation after Project Blue Book, or a book on, you know, like, where we suspect there are UFOs, UFO files kept, you know, how they're kept, how they got there, what format they're in, who sent them, you know, what type of stuff, from Foo Fighters from the 1940s right through to current. I mean, we know that I'll give you an example of just how many UFO files might be out there. A book was written, you might know it, by a guy called Keith Chester a few years ago called Strange Company, and it was about Foo Fighters during World War II.
Yes.
He actually spent 10 years at the... Between his first visit at the National Archives in Washington to when he published his book and, like, finished writing it, he made it was 10 years, and he made 100 trips to the National Archives and Records Administration building in Washington. And he just mainly looked through the boxes of the 415th Night Fighting Squadron, the 7th Tactical Air Command, and the 20th Bombardment Wing. And he found 10,000 pages of documents that were at least suspicious. And out of that 10,000, he found 1,500 pages that were definitely really strange, like about Foo Fighter UFOs, bright lights, copper disc-shaped objects and weird things coming up and visiting the planes and going away and landing and whatever else. And I'm thinking, I've read this and I'm thinking, there were so many bombardment commands and so many squadrons and units and then on-the-ground battalions and divisions in World War II from the Americans alone, not to mention the British. And I'm thinking the National Archives Records Administration would have records from every battalion, every company, every squadron, every command, wing, air division, naval task fleet, you know, and everything. And I'm thinking, if he found 1,500 good documents, for, you know, administrative documents, actual UFO reports, follow-up reports, internal memorandums, I'm thinking, if he's found 1,500 pages from just mainly seven entities of the United States Air Force, I'm thinking, what about the other 700 entities of the United States Army, Air Force, Navy, and Marines that were in Europe. I'm thinking there must be 100,000 pages mentioning some sort of UFO activity just in World War II alone.
Wow.
You can just extrapolate the numbers. I mean, it's very simple. I've confirmed with Keith. I thought, I've got this wrong here. There just can't be that much stuff. And he said, no, seriously. He said, he only got 3.1% of what was from there from just World War II. And I'm thinking, he's found documents where pilots have been harassed for 45 minutes straight by objects in the sky over Germany or the North Sea or Denmark, to the point where they've actually fired cannon rounds into the objects, and the cannon rounds have just gone right into the object and not come out the other side, right? But nothing's happened. We know that they've hit the cannon rounds have hit the objects because every 10th bullet is a tracer round, and the tracer rounds are going straight into the UFOs, and absolutely nothing is happening. That the UFO is still sitting there strong. What's that?
Wow, wish I knew. Let's take another call.
That's just from Europe. There's Asia as well. Yeah.
Well, east of the Rockies, Joe in Long Island. Hi, Joe. You're on with Paul Dean.
Yeah, Paul. One question would be, are there government documents that predate the industrial era, you know, even from as far back as the Civil War? And also, does NORAD consider just nuclear plants at risk? And then the third question would be, are you a fan of the Twilight Zone?
Okay. To answer your third question, I don't even know what the Twilight Zone is. I assume it's a book series or a TV series.
Classic sci-fi TV series, yeah.
Now, your first question is absolutely stellar. So what's really interesting is that your government, and definitely the British government, do have, whether you call them government, the term government's very loose. I mean, if you're going to get into churches and clergy and universities as well, then we're talking. Now, the UK and the US government definitely have UFO documents. The earliest ones I've seen are ship logs from US and Welsh and Scottish ships from all the way back from like 1750, 1782, 1805, right? So ship logs where, you know, they'll talk about, you know, we were visited by a strange shooting star last night that stopped above the ship and then chose to break into three demon pieces and then fly off into the heavens. We have talked to the pastor who is on the ship and he feels it is a message from God. Now, we've seen, I mean, these are serious ship logs you see from government. I mean, these are US Navy kind of Coast Guard documents, US from Department of Mines and from very early colleges. So there is actually UFO documents that date right back. Like there's certainly, I mean, to top it off, there's certainly thousands of newspaper articles. But certainly I know in Britain, the UK churches, like the clergy and the colleges and the religious schools and the scholarly schools, you know, whether they're hardcore US, whether they're not so much government as such, because they didn't even have air forces back then or planes and whatever, but there certainly is a lot of documentation going right back. A lot of the time, we don't even know how to read it. Now, the middle question is really interesting. NORAD are responsible for air sovereignty and airspace management across the whole of North America. And of course, if a battle space commander or a senior commander at a nuclear weapons or a nuclear energy facility, that would obviously, a UFO event or an ongoing UFO or UFOs event occurring above a nuclear facility would obviously be just naturally of more of a concern to the nearest NORAD regional headquarters than, say, if it was happening over some fishing vessel out off the coast of, you know, Catalina Island or something like that. But I mean, certainly I've seen, I mean, some of the most provocative cases have occurred around nuclear facilities and atomic energy facilities. But whether NORAD takes one more seriously than, say, the other, I would say as far as how fast they react would be much quicker around a nuclear facility or a huge Air Force base.
Paul, let me ask you this. As you note, NORAD has responsibility for the airspace over North America. Can it detect, does it have the ability and sensors placed elsewhere around the globe? Can it see whatever comes in into Earth's atmosphere?
Yeah, now this is really interesting. So how it works is NORAD's chief concern is airspace and airspace management above North America. However, they do have an extremely important role in what we call like space surveillance and space tracking, but NORAD are more of a customer
of the data, because the organization that tracks, monitors, surveils space for like foreign missile launches and incoming space debris, asteroids breaking up, like, you know, spacecraft breaking up. The organization in the United States is actually the U.S. Strategic Command, based at Offutt Air Force Base, Nebraska, and they pick up. They run America's ultra long range radar system for surveilling and tracking space objects, plus something called the GEODSS network of electro-optical cameras that monitor space, and they do it from all over the world: Diego Garcia, Spain, Australia. So Strategic Command are the primary responsibility organization for space, and Strategic Command are made up of Air Force Space Command, Navy Space Command, and Army Ballistic Missile and Space Command. And it just so happens that NORAD is a customer of their data. It's not, people say, oh, NORAD track everything in space. Well, technically, you know, on NORAD screens, everything in space apparently is shown at a moment's notice.
But it's someone else that's actually doing the tracking.
Certainly Strategic Command at Offutt Air Force Base, plus Vandenberg and Tyndall and so on, the ones actually doing the tracking. It's just that NORAD happens to get all the data as well, or whatever they want.
So, and the National Reconnaissance Office, NRO, is that data fed into NORAD or SAC?
Nowadays, with the capabilities, who knows? The National Reconnaissance Office obviously design, test bed, and build all of the Department of Defense's and Canada's National Research Council and so on space satellites. Now, whether National Reconnaissance Office space satellites, you know, data, whether it's a U.S. Air Force or a U.S. Army satellite or whatever, now, whether that goes to NORAD, I don't know. I know it certainly goes to Schriever Air Force Base and Buckley Air Force Base. Depends on who the final customer is. I mean, if a satellite is going over, you know, Cuba, and they're looking for, say, some new huge vessel that's being built, obviously the primary customer would be something like Headquarters Atlantic Fleet, U.S. Navy Intelligence. Now, if the same satellite went over Russia looking for, you know, like verification of the SALT II treaty, looking for, you know, nuclear missiles that had to be pulled apart because of the law, that information would go to the Defense Intelligence Agency science and tech desk. So whether NORAD gets stuff from space from satellites, I'm not sure. But certainly they do monitor space, yeah. Yep.
Let's go to go west of the Rockies, Fran in Modesto. How you doing, Fran?
Good morning, sir. I'm doing fine. What I'd like to say is back in the 50s, I was in the Marine Corps, and I did teletype, and yes, on UFOs in the 50s, 70s, and also in summer of 2015.
Wow. So you did communications of UFO cases?
Yes, sir, I did. Back in the 50s.
Wow. Were you based on the shore or on a ship?
Neither one. I was at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina.
Wow, that is awesome. Do you remember where you were sent? Like, would you get, say, a UFO report come in? Do you remember where you were sending it?
You want the honest truth? No. Yes. Because of what happened back in those days, something came to some of us and made some of us very ill. This illness, yes, I have, I only get sick, real bad sick. I did back in the 70s and in the summer of 2015. I got sick again in that same thing. And anyone who was in the military who remembers what one crazy word is, lots of us will remember it.
What are you saying, that when you hear this word, it triggers a physical effect?
If anything comes in saying SOS, 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 that means something to military.
Right.
Have you ever heard that kind of crazy stuff before?
I don't know. I mean, I work with just like hardcore government documents. I mean, I've read all sorts of strange stuff before, yeah.
Okay, SOS, SOS.
Fran, I'll tell you what, maybe we'll put you in contact with Paul and you can send him some information on some of the cases that you heard. Thanks for the call. Try to get one more in. First time caller, Donna in North Carolina. Hi, Donna, you're on with Paul Dean. We got about 2 minutes left.
Okay, real quick. G'day, mate.
yeah.
You've been dying to say that, haven't you?
Okay, look. I wanted to ask him and you if you've ever heard of a book called Behold a Pale Horse.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Written by Milton Cooper.
Milton Cooper, yeah.
Yeah, sorry, I have. I don't think I've got it. I might have it in PDF, but yeah, I haven't.
Oh, have you read it? Have you read it?
No.
It's got a whole chapter on UFOs.
I know. Yeah, he was in the military. He claims he was in the military. I've never seen any papers, but yeah, I think I've got the book in PDF, but I will dabble in it one day. You know, like he was. I mean, if he was doing some good documents research, yeah, I'd look at it straight away.
I was got a whole chapter on a song coming out of the Pacific Ocean, not just him, but others, and he saw him in Vietnam, and there's been other stories about soldiers, the boys that were in Vietnam, that saw UFOs, and it also deals, when they saw it come out of the ocean, it was like 3 football fields wide, it was a disc.
Hey, Donna, we're running out of time. I appreciate the call. Yeah, there are a lot of USO and UFO reports dealing that are reported by the Navy. I mean, that's a whole other area for you to research. I don't know if you've dived into naval records or not.
I have. I've started to recently, actually, and Vietnam records. I'm starting to find records from the 3rd Marine Amphibious Division and the 1st Battalion of the 1st Division. And so we've just recently, it's not just NORAD and Operator 3s we're worried about now. We've found recently that there is an enormous amount of UFO documentation around Vietnam from every command, all 4 branches of the United States military, and we've just started finding it now, hundreds and hundreds of pages.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of my contemporaries were servicemen, served there, and they all have UFO stories. There's tons of them. Well, best of luck with your research, Paul. I've enjoyed the conversation.
I hope I wasn't too much for you. My accent, is it too strong?
I enjoy it very much, and I'm going to have to write down some of these slang terms that we heard. They went by in a blur, but I hope you'll stay in touch with us. I have enjoyed it. I'm going to send you a message after the show, and I hope you'll come back sometime.
Of course I will. Send me an email, and if anyone wants to see my work, it's just UFOs documenting the evidence. Or just type in Paul Dean UFO file.
Right. We've got the link on our website. Thanks again. I appreciate it. Thanks also to my colleagues there at Coast. Tonight, Juan Velasquez, Donna Walker, Dan Galante, our webmaster, Lex Lonehood, and producer Chris Boros. George Norrie is back here tomorrow night. I'm back next Sunday. My guest will be Tom DeLonge. Tom DeLonge's first interview since about his new project, and I think you won't want to miss it. Good night, everyone.